wanna change the world.
And hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 32 of the Yes And podcast. My name is Travis Thomas. I'm the creator of Live Yes and the host of the weekly Yap here. And I just want to say welcome to episode 32. I am super excited to have my guest today, Josh Allen Dykstra from Denver, Colorado. He and I had a great conversation this week, and it was so fun that we had our interview, and then we caught up a little bit afterward and realized that we have a mutual friend in common, who is Tracy Fenton from World Blue. That's World and then Blue, B-L-U, no E. And it's just a small world. As I listened to Josh's interview and his answers and his responses and where he's coming from, I was like, wow, this is so in line with what World Blue is all about, which I want to give it a short plug. Coming up here in 2 weeks in Miami Beach is the World Blue Summit 2016, which is based on the power question. The power question being, what would you do if you weren't afraid? So that's coming up here in Miami Beach in 2 weeks. For more information, you can go to worldblue.com. It is a shameless plug because I will be speaking a few times, but this is a community. This is a tribe of people. This is a group of CEOs, individuals who are truly motivated, inspired about changing workplace culture, changing the way business is done. And it's just a fascinating summit, a great group of people to be around for a couple of days. So make sure you check that out. And so, again, getting a chance to talk to Josh, you're going to love his interview this week. And without further ado, let's get into it. The funny thing is I connected with Josh over Twitter, right? And I have to love social media, how you find people and how you connect. But Josh has been doing fantastic work. He's the co-CEO of a consulting group called Forte. He's the co-CEO of StrengthScope US, which is all about recognizing your strengths and working from your strengths. And he is the co-founder of The Work Revolution. And we talk a little bit about all these different ideas today in our interview. I had such a pleasure getting a chance to talk with Josh, and I know he and I will be talking more in the future. So before we jump into that real quick, so that I don't have to jump back in at the end of the interview, there's a 30 Days of Yes 101 coming up starting May 1st. 30 days, 30 activities, unlimited transformation. Go to the events page on Live Yes And to get more information about that. It's only $60 for the month. You get a daily activity, a video from me, and access to me for one-on-one coaching every day for 30 days for $60. Grab a couple of friends. Fourth person is free. And again, that's starting May 1st. And check me out on Periscope every day. I have a scope. I'm at Live Yes And. And so feel free to follow me every day there as well. And that's about it. I want to say hi to everyone at Massive Soccer, Massive Coaching. Got a chance to be in Sarasota this past weekend, helping with the three teams that were over there. And we had a team win the whole thing. We had a team runner-up and a team that lost in the semifinals. So a great showing and just a great time working with the kids and the parents all weekend. So that was a lot of fun. So, well, let's get into it. This is Josh Allen Dykstra, the co-CEO of Forte. He is the co-founder of The Work Revolution, and so happy to have him on the weekly Yap for today. Well, welcome everyone to this week's weekly Yap podcast, the Yes And podcast, and I'm super excited to have my guest on this week. He is Josh Allen Dykstra. He is the author of Igniting the Invisible Tribe, Designing an Organization That Doesn't Suck. We are going to talk about that. I love that title. He's a singer-songwriter. He has a consulting firm called Forte, and I know he is passionate about the work revolution. So Josh, thanks so much for joining us today.
No, thank you, Travis.
So Josh, just to jump right into it, and I know you're really jazzed about the work revolution. What is the work revolution, and what's your inspiration behind it?
Yeah, so put kind of simply, no matter what statistic you look at, whether you look at engagement or passion or whatever you want to look at in terms of how people connect to their work, it's terrible, Right. So, you know, engagement, 2/3 of people disengaged. You look at passion, it's worse. It's like 80 to 90% of people are not passionate about the work that they spend the majority of their lives doing. And to me, this is just, it's a tragedy. Like there's no reason for work to be the way that it is. And so the work revolution in the most literal sense means to turn around. And so like the earth does a revolution around the sun, it's a turnaround. And so very, very simply, it's the revolution is about turning that number around. I want 80 to 90% of people to be passionate about the work that they spend their lives doing.
Excellent. And so for you, Josh, does this passion come from your own personal experience of sort of being in corporate America? Where did this fire start for you?
Yeah. So I, like you mentioned, the singer-songwriter thing, while I was kind of trying to figure out if that's what I wanted to do for my life and my career, I worked a lot of jobs, right? You work a lot of side jobs when you're trying to do music because music doesn't really pay the bills. And so I found myself working in all these different kinds of places, for radio stations and Starbucks and Apple and like all these different, really like some really huge companies. And then I worked for some nonprofits and small companies. And I found that, as you probably have too, the people you work for impact the quality of your life in a pretty huge way. If you've got a great manager, your life is better. And if you have a crappy manager, your life is kind of crappy. And I thought that was just my experience. And then at some point, my eyes were somehow opened, and I started to see all this research around engagement and passion. And I realized that my story was everyone's story, that this disconnection from the thing that we do the most, this work thing, is just endemic. Like it's everywhere, and almost everyone has a story like I had of a terrible manager who made my life kind of like a living hell. And so I thought, if I can make a dent in that universe of helping work not suck, of helping it be a life-giving thing instead of a life-sucking thing, then that could be making a big impact for a whole lot of people. And so that was kind of, I think, what the light bulb that turned on for me was like, oh my goodness, everyone, almost everyone is dealing with this. It's just incredible.
And so for you, when it comes to your consulting, when it comes to you working with organizations, what is the first thing that you're looking to address when you go in and work with an organization?
Yeah. So we're a pretty unapologetically strengths-based company. And so everything we do kind of comes from that angle of positive psychology, and it's very intentional. We're very, very research focused in the way that we approach our consulting. And we believe that the research behind this positive psychology approach to work is the place to start because it opens people up to change.
Yeah.
Right? No, change can be really hard. It's disruptive. And if we can start to show people a better future and something that's more energizing and more life-giving, and then show them all of the piling research that shows that if you approach work from this positive psychology strengths perspective, not only do you feel more energized in the work you do, which is fantastic, but your company does better.
Yeah.
And like collaboration improves, your creativity goes up, like all of these things that we want to improve in our companies on the people-related side improve. Conflict goes down, right? And then you see all of these kind of financial measures improve down the road if you stick with this. And so it's just a win. There's no reason for a company to not do this. It's just a win on all sides.
And so it's interesting. I mean, what you're talking about, it would seem like it would be a no-brainer slam dunk. You're going into an organization, you're promoting positivity, positive psychology. And yet I assume there's some huge misconceptions when it comes to organizations wanting to be resistant to this kind of change. What are some of the misconceptions that you've run into that organizations feel like they can't have one without the other, or we can't have a positive workforce without sacrificing the bottom line? What is it that you've run into?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I'm feeling lately is all of this kind of inertia from the industrial kind of way of working of the last century. And so primarily in our organizations today, this the hierarchy kind of top-down structure of management, it's a holdover from an industrial time of Adam Smith and Frederick Taylor, and you know, this very mechanistic way of thinking, and which is all based on the philosophy that people are dumb and people are lazy.
Right.
And most of our organizational theory is built on that foundation. And so when you've got a foundation like that, which is what most of our organizations do when they kind of build out this hierarchy model, even though they don't realize, they don't mean to, right? We're not intentionally saying that we think our people are stupid. We're just kind of seeing, we're doing what we've seen done.
Sure.
Right. So there's just a lot of this kind of this holdover from this old, really kind of outdated method of organizational design. And so I think a lot of that is impacting the way that we work now. And again, I think most of it's unintentional, but I think we're feeling the effects of that very intensely, in that we're asking people to come to work with their brains, with their ideas, with their creativity, with their innovation. And then at the same time, we have all of this structure that doesn't let them do it.
Yeah.
Right? It prevents them from actually using their brains. And so most people have to leave their brains at home. When they come to the office, they can't bring their full selves, their full creative human person to work. And that's not welcomed. And then we wonder why we don't get people's great ideas.
right. And so, yeah, so the structure and the physical structure, the design, the processes, how everything operates is actually stifling to the creativity and to the engagement.
I believe so. Yeah.
And so where does the biggest change, Josh, need to happen? Does it need to happen? Does it need to happen from a leadership standpoint? Does it need to be from the design standpoint? Does it need to come from the employees up? You know, what's your thought on that?
Yes. that's the short answer. I do think it does need to come from everywhere. You know, and it's absolutely a leadership kind of mindset shift, and from the people who we traditionally think are leaders. And I think it's everyone else in the company. We need to help everyone start to think of themselves as they can lead too. That leadership is really just behaviors that are worth following. It has nothing to do with your position. And so if you think about leadership that way, then anybody can lead something that's important. They just need to stand up and say, hey, this is important. Let's try this. And of course, again, that's where the structures come in as challenging, because that's not very acceptable in many organizations for anybody to just stand up and lead. There's a lot of, you know, societal or implied, you know, kind of rules.
Yeah.
that you don't do that. And yes, and I think also from the policies and procedure standpoint, those need to evolve pretty dramatically too. You know, when we find that we can't even trust people to know when to show up at work, you know, we have to mandate hours, or we can't really trust people to know what pants to put on, and we have to mandate a dress code, right? We're creating adult daycare centers, as one of my friends says.
Yeah.
Right. And it's just like we ask them to make these really complex adult decisions, and at the same time we treat them like children, and we can't have both. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, and these giant HR manuals, these 300-page HR manuals of what you can't do, instead of being really clear about what is it we're about compared to what we're not about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing some good examples of companies trying to toss those out and redo them, and which is really encouraging and great. We just need to keep going. You know, we just need to really lean into that and kind of. There needs to be a pretty systemic reinvention, I think.
Yeah. And so when we talk about leadership and when we think about leadership, in your opinion, what does the modern day sort of inspired leader need to look like? You know, what is the environment, the culture that they're creating?
Yeah. I think a couple things come to mind. So the leaders who really thrive, I think, in the marketplace of today and tomorrow are ones that first are, they've become really good friends with the mirror, and not in the egotistical sense, in the sense of, I know, like, I can look in the mirror and I can see who's causing most of my problems, and it's the guy in the mirror. It's not somebody else. And so they're very introspective. I think. There's a tremendous amount of self-awareness. They know what their strengths are. They know what they're not. They know how to kind of mitigate their areas of weakness, let's say. They know how to put the right people around them to manage the areas where they're weak. I think the other thing that they do, in that same kind of introspective sense, they look to themselves to model the things that they want. So it's not, I'm going to tell you that this is what we're going to do. It's, I'm going to show you by becoming the kind of person that's actually worth following. And so it's much more of a, I think, an individual look, an individual journey of how do I make myself a better human being? Mm-hmm. And by doing so, I actually become a better leader. You know, but instead, I think we've gotten to this place where there's these millions of leadership books and tricks and tips, and there's plenty of good things out there. And there's this kind of missing component of, all right, am I actually living the stuff that I want to see? Am I actually engaging the people that are around? Am I inspiring them? Am I motivating them and not just barking orders? And so it's becoming, it's almost becoming a new kind of leader.
So it sounds like leaders that have some sort of intrinsic sense of purpose, leaders right. that have a high level of humility, and thinking a lot about, obviously, Brené Brown's work that she's doing right now, just that word of vulnerability, which is just becoming more and more commonplace.
Yeah, I think you said that much more eloquently than I did. I think that's exactly right. It is. It's all of those things, and it's what used to be called soft skills,
right?
Which turns out that this kind of stuff is the hardest stuff in the world to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So my wife and I we finally saw the movie The Big Short last night, which was fantastic and also hugely depressing at the same time. When you look at leadership, that leadership at its worst, and with really no repercussions as a result of it. So what are you seeing in your work that that is a sign of hope that there's a shift?
Yeah, when we started the Work Revolution Project about almost 3 years ago, me and a couple co-founders who live in New York City, we started this little project called Work Revolution. It's basically just like a movement or an advocacy group that exists to amplify this conversation. So anybody who's making the revolution happen, we celebrate them and support them however we can. And I would say that even when we did that, you know, 3-ish years ago, this conversation was not as prevalent as it is now. There's so many more conferences and gatherings and online places for people to talk about culture and why culture matters. And there's organizations that have really kind of started championing this idea. We're seeing some of it from tech companies, but we're also seeing it a whole lot of other industries. There's a whole kind of discussion, I think, that's more at the forefront now around self-management or self-organizing or participation-driven organizations. So it's almost like, so if the Taylorism is kind of the primary operating system of business, this is a different operating system. It's a different, so this kind of participation-driven operating system is one that's, I think, really become much more center stage even in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
A lot more conversation around it. And even the fact that Zappos has kind of taken on Holacracy, right? So that was a pretty public thing, and with varying degrees of success. But I think at least it's raising the dialogue around, you know, there's better ways to run a company than the way we've been doing it for the last 100 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're seeing that, obviously you're seeing more mainstream that the organizations, the groups, they're wanting to have that conversation. They're starting to talk about this kind of work. So I remember reading Dan Pink's book Drive a few years ago. He talked about, people are looking for, was it purpose, mastery, and autonomy?
Yeah.
And we know that the number one reason people leave their job is it's not money. It's because of the person they work for.
Yep.
So if you were to consult just everyday manager, what's the one or two things that someone who's in a management position, a leadership position, what's the one or two things they can do right now to have a really positive impact on culture?
Yeah, easy. Learn your strengths. Like, learn what you have. Excuse me. Learn what you have. Learn what you don't have. And start appreciating the same things about your team members. Learn their strengths. Learn what energizes them. Learn what doesn't. So that might be actually a good thing for me to mention, too, is that when I say strengths, I'm not just talking about competency. I'm not just talking about what you're good at.
Sure.
I'm talking about the things that make you feel strong and energized. And it's very important to kind of tease those two ideas apart. Because even though most of us think of our strengths as being things that we're good at, which is partially true, it's not enough. You have to also be energized by that thing, because you can be really good at stuff that sucks the life out of you, right? So that's the piece here, is to really start engaging in these energy conversations with your people, your direct reports, and yourself. What energizes me? How do I do more of the work that energizes me and less of the work that drains me? And same thing with everyone on your team. How do I help each of them do more of what energizes them and less of what drains them? And that sounds very simple, but that is absolutely the missing conversation in most organizations we work with. We just don't talk about that. It's, you know, we say, do your job, you know, get your work done. And if instead we took this other approach, we'd find that people would do their jobs much faster and much better.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like common sense, yet it's treated like rocket science, when in fact it seems to be more people science than anything else.
Yeah, yeah. And again, there's a lot of inertia, you know, most of us haven't had good role models. You know, most of us haven't worked for a good leader who's kind of role modeled these things for us. So more of us have worked for a terrible manager and who's taught us a lot of bad habits. And again, it's not really your fault. Like, it's kind of like parenting, you know, it's caught and not taught, right? We do what we see done and not what people tell us to do. And the way we work is the same thing, but we need to start intentionally overriding that and say, okay, these bad habits that we've got, they're not actually making our workplace work very well. They're actually doing quite the opposite.
Now, and for you, Josh, is this a revolution that you saw coming? What is it about this that really inspires you on a personal level?
Yeah. This all kind of started for me coming out. So I was doing my grad school in 2008, 2009, and we all kind of remember what was happening in the market.
Yes.
2008, 2009. So I was just curious. You know, what the heck is happening to the world of work? Because it all just seemed to be imploding. Of course, now we have a lot more insight as to, you like you said, The Big Short, what actually happened on the financial side. But I became convinced at that time that there's actually something bigger going on too. That there's also this kind of mentality shift happening. That people are starting to want more. People are starting to demand more from this thing where they spend the majority of their lives, called work. They don't want it to just be a paycheck. They want it to be meaningful and like you said, purposeful. So I'm convinced that we're in the middle of this kind of larger mindset shift of human beings, and that we're just starting to demand more from this thing that we call work, which is a very, very good thing, but it's also quite disruptive.
Yeah.
And the biggest motivation for me, I'd have to say, is probably my two little girls. I have two daughters. And, you know, when they want to go get a job in 15, 20 years, I want it to be a little bit easier for them to find work that doesn't suck.
Yeah.
I just want it to be a little bit more realistic to say, yeah, there's a lot of great places to work that will actually help you become a better version of yourself. You know, those are the organizations. That's what an organization could and should do.
Yeah.
It can do that, and we have plenty of examples of ones that do.
Right.
That should become the norm instead of the exception.
Yeah. And so being that this is the Yes And podcast, Josh, so when I talk about Yes And, Yes And is about taking what the facts are, taking what life has given you, and being in acceptance with it, not having to like it, but being in acceptance with it. The and is how we choose our response. We choose our purposeful response. And so kind of, you know, turning lemons into lemonade. Uh-huh. When you look back on your experience, being where you are now, is there a part of your story that seemed really disjointed at the time, but now you look back at it as sort of an inflection moment, like, wow, I totally didn't see how that curveball was going to lead to this opportunity, kind of a big yes and opportunity. Is there anything that stands out to you?
Yeah, well, it's one of the reasons why I was excited when you reached out, Travis. I love your angle on this. It's very positive psychology.
Yes,
right? Very much about the path of possibilities versus limitations.
Right.
Excuse me. And so I love that approach. I think it's a great way to learn from the things that happen in our lives. And when I look back, I see plenty of disjointed things that made absolutely no sense at the time. And the biggest ones that come to my mind are I got fired from a couple jobs a couple times. And I actually tell this story at the beginning of my book. It's not a fun thing to get fired from new jobs. And it happened to me twice. And at the time, of course, it was very painful, and I was really it felt very disjointed, and I was very confused by it. And looking back now, I can say it was both of them were really good things, because it's pushed me into the work that I do. It turns out that I'm not a very good employee. that's not my strengths. I'm a much better consultant.
Sure.
So I like to push the envelope and get people thinking, and that doesn't always fly so well in the current kind of organizational structure in many places. And so, but it makes me a really good consultant, because I get to ask the questions that need asking.
Yeah.
So, you know, in hindsight, it makes sense, and it was like doing me a favor. But yeah, at the time, it was pretty rough.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I love that. I love that. Just that honest realization that I'm not a very good employee. I'm a much better consultant. I can relate to you on that one. And now I think, you know, obviously, working in organizations a lot over the years, including actually being in a few, some really healthy, some not so much at all. It's so easy when you're in that situation, especially as the employee who doesn't feel like they have a lot of control or choice, to feel kind of stuck, to feel that sort of victim mentality. What are your suggestions to that employee who finds themselves in an unhealthy organization? What can they do to A, sort of better their own experience, but also be a positive influence on the overall culture?
Yeah, and I'm gonna maybe sound a little bit like a broken record here, but I think again the place to start is with your strengths. Like start really leaning into what makes me feel alive, what makes me feel strong and energized in my work. Most people have more flexibility in their roles than they realize, and like you said, we do often put ourselves in the victim place, and it really is in many cases. We put ourselves there.
Yeah.
Nobody else did that. We tell ourselves all sorts of stories that they did it to us, but really we did. In most situations at work, nobody's holding a gun to your head and making you do stuff, right?
Like, right.
You still have complete volition and choice over your own body.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty powerful realization to say, okay, if I started just maybe trying to approach my work in a way that energizes me a little bit more, I'd feel a lot more engaged, and I have more control over that than I think. And that's a really good place to start. And also, even in many, kind of like you said, unhealthy organizations, there's still pockets of excellence. There's still great managers in there. And so if by chance you work for a decent manager, if you go to them and say, hey, if I approach my work in this way, instead of that way, I'm going to do it faster. I'm going to do it better. I'm going to return more money to the bottom line. You can make your case for why to use your strengths, because it's actually better for the organization if you do. So if there's a way to kind of spin this, you know, which is very authentic and not very spinny at all.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if we take this approach, if I get to do things in the way that energizes me more, it's actually better for all of us. So people kind of taking their power back, I think in that regard is a really, really good place to start. And then if you are a manager inside an organization, you do have people you lead, understand that engagement lives at the local level. Mm. Right? The engagement lives, where most of that engagement lives is between a manager and their direct reports. And so you have an enormous amount of ability, like we're saying at the beginning, to make your team lives better.
Right? Yeah.
You can make their lives better or worse. And if you're a manager, realize that you hold a lot of that power. You're probably the most important person in your team members' lives. You know, probably like more important than their doctor, more important. You know, like you have so much influence over their well-being. And so if nothing else, you can create an engaged little pocket of excellence, like one of my other friends says, and make that your goal. Is just to make
yeah.
what you can control, make it awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And Josh, I know you have, is it the StrengthStarter, that you're affiliated with?
Yeah. StrengthStarter is one of the products. The main product is called StrengthScope. So that's everything that I do is kind of about creating better workplaces, more energizing workplaces. And that's why we love the StrengthScope assessment. It's a psychometric tool, product suite, really, that has a basic assessment, 360 assessment, leader assessment, team assessment, engagement index. So it's a whole suite of products. And the folks who created it are based in the UK. And so we help manage distribution and training for the US territory. And we've done a lot of assessments over the years, as maybe you have too. And there's a lot of stuff out there. And some of it's great, and some of it's not so great. And we tend to think that this is pretty great and pretty helpful. You know, we tend to be fairly obsessed with action,
yeah,
a behavior change. How do you actually do this? Not just an intellectual exercise, but how do we really make our teams more engaged and passionate and collaborative and effective? We tend to obsess over those things. And so we like this tool because we think it helps with the action part and not just the intellectual exercise part.
Excellent. And so I will provide some links in the podcast as well, but feel free to go ahead and plug some sites where people might be able to find you as well as find some of these tools.
Sure. So, my consulting company is called Forte, which of course is the Latin word for strong. So you can probably see the connection there and all of the stuff that I talk about. But our website is BeForte. So Be Strong, BeForte.com. And so that's the consulting practice. The StrengthScope website is at StrengthScopeUS.com. And then for my speaking and writing and some of my thought leader work, you can just find me personally at joshallan.com. And it's Josh, A-L-L-A-N.com.
Perfect. And Josh, obviously the question that we've really been leading up to the whole time here is tell us about your crazy socks addiction.
It's a bit of a problem, Travis. I can admit it. I love the crazy socks. You know, there's not a lot of ways for men to be fashionable. You know, like ladies have a few more options in that department, right? So I found that I kind of enjoy the being slightly fashionable, and some crazy socks is one way to do it and to get some conversation going. I'm starting to see more crazy ties.
Oh wow! Yeah, yeah.
So I'm seeing a little more of this. So I'm just about to maybe go down that path, but there may be a new addiction in my future.
No, I can appreciate that. I know. I think it was this Christmas, my wife bought me like 8 pairs of new socks. And I can honestly say it had been a dozen years since I bought myself some business socks.
Yeah.
And she went crazy for me, and I'm appreciating it. It's almost like what's going on underneath the surface there. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, lets people know you're just a little bit left to center, which is where I like to be.
Excellent. Well, Josh, man, I'm so appreciative of your time. So inspiring to hear the work that you're doing, and just really interested in the work revolution. And I know that we'll be talking more. But thanks so much for taking the time on the Weekly Yep this week.
Thank you so much for having me, Travis. Really a pleasure.
You say you want a revolution.